Grace to you and peace from God who creates and redeems and sustains all things. Amen. So we have just come off of that beautiful story of Christmas in Luke. And it's a Christmas story that reads a little like a Hallmark special. You know the type. There's a little bit of anxiety that happens in the middle of the story. You have really kind of sympathetic characters, a baby, two poor parents, a couple of cows. And then at the end of the whole thing is a kind of heartwarming resolution. A baby born in a manger. Shepherds, angels. You almost expect Michael Landon to show up on stage and say, "This is how it ought to be." If the Christmas story in Luke is like a Hallmark special, then our story this morning for Epiphany is more like a film noir. There's a lot of backstory that we don't hear, but that you, I assume, know. So in this film noir, a politically hungry despot named Herod, willing to do anything to hang on to his power, charms three wise men. He's a little like the character Fagin in Dickens' Oliver Twist. He will dupe and lie and charm and even kill if need be to hang on to his power. He charms those three travelers to help him find the newborn king, you know, that he might worship them, that he might worship that newborn king of Jerusalem. But in the words of James Taylor, in one of my favorite songs that he ever wrote was Home by Another Way, he says, "But they were warned in a dream of King Herod's scheme, and they went home by another way." Because Herod is not interested in worshiping the boy Jesus. He has heard that the new king of Israel, of Jerusalem, has been born, and Herod is having none of it. Well, you know the rest of the story, right? The three wise men come and they bring the gifts to Jesus, and they go home by another way because you know what will happen under Herod. What follows shortly thereafter? The slaughter of the innocents. He does not find the baby Jesus, despite knowing the exact hour of the star appeared. And so he figures he'll just kind of take care of the whole thing. It's a horrible story. It's not one we usually will tell our children. We sort of stop at the three kings. Isn't that nice? So my question is, why does Matthew tell this story in this place? What's he got in mind? Well, I wonder if part of what's going on is kind of wrapped up in our name for this day. So this is Epiphany Sunday. And Epiphany means to reveal, epiphanao, it's almost an unmasking to see what's happening. A light shone in dark places. It's the star that, I don't know how many of you ever hike at night or have been out camping, and on a really dark night, at first you can't see anything until the stars come out and the moon comes up, and then you can begin to see the path you seek. It's an epiphany. Matthew is trying to reveal something to us, unveil something to us. And that star over Bethlehem, that star that Herod and the three wise men seek, reveals something new that God has always been doing. I suspect that for Matthew, the birth of Jesus is the birth of an anti-Herod. There is nothing new in all of this story. If you look back in history, there have always been Herods. People for whom power and purpose, riches and wealth are to be gained at any cost. But what if Jesus is the anti-Herod? You know, a child, not a warrior. Born to poor parents, not part of a ruling dynastic family. He's born in a manger, not a great palace. And he's to bring peace, not just an end to war. He shows love and does not press for even more power. And this little Jesus will die that others might live, rather than to live at the cost of many deaths. Almost an anti-Herod. You see, that light of the new star shines on something completely different, not only different from Herod and what had existed, but also different than what anyone expected. That light changes our perspective. So in your bulletin, you may have wondered why, you have a picture. It's a picture that I'm absolutely certain every one of you have seen before. It's a really familiar one. Bob, do you have your picture? What do you see? A goblet, okay? A vase. And some of you see two faces. This is a really easy one because you've all seen it, and I thought I'll go, yes, I'm afraid to ask. White and black shapes. That's very good answer. When I originally was conceiving of this sermon, I was going to do one of those ones that's made up of all the dots that you have to sort of unfocus your eyes to see. But I can never do those. So I figured we'll do something easy. Isn't it interesting, when this test first came out, it was developed by a Danish psychologist. And when it first came out, before we all became familiar with it, it was amazing that there were people who could not see the vase. And others who could not see the faces. My other favorite one, and I almost used that one, but it hit a little too close to home, the one that is the young woman in the big hat, or the hag. The hag was a little close to home, so I thought, we'll use the faces. It's interesting, isn't it, how depending on your mindset or how you see what you will see in the picture. For a lot of people, they see the vase. So I was thinking to myself that in a way, Herod's rule, Herod's way of being, that way of power is like, it's like the vase. It is in constant need of being filled. It's like the bowl under my Christmas tree, which is relentless, relentless in needing to be filled. I actually think my dog's been drinking out of the bottom of it, but having said that, you know, this life of vase is like Herod, who will take everything, no matter what it is. And we've all been trained in a vase life, right? You know, our purpose is to get, not you, of course, but for some people, it's really to get everything that you possibly can pack into your life. Stuff, power, prestige, career, everything. And you just keep putting it in the vase. And the vase is never full. There's always a little more room. You're just a little bit short. Herod wants it all. There is no room for any other king. It's a vase. Power, tyranny, everything. But what if there's an alternative? What if this star over Bethlehem shines a different light on the diagram of our life? I think then later about this child who is in the manger over here. In our manger, it's funny because one of our hymns today will say no diadem. Well, except our Jesus already has a diadem. But this child maybe represents something else. What if that star over Bethlehem helps us to see faces? What I love about this diagram is which direction are the faces pointing? Toward each other. Are they men or women? I don't know. Are they black or white? I don't know. Are they Romanian or Japanese? And so only Japanese people will be saved. It's the beauty of it. See, this Jesus will grow up to be the one who lives more with faces than vases. Really, what does Jesus spend most of his time doing? Talking with people. Hanging out, healing people. Not only that, the faces to which he will encounter, the faces which he faces, are the faces of people no one else wants to talk to. The Gentile, the leper, the blind man, the prostitute, the tax collector. All of those people that everyone else considers to be unclean are the very faces that Jesus will turn his face to. And most of the time, what he's doing is sort of forging new relationships both with God and with each other. It's a little like the ministry to which all of you have been called in your faith. I've told this story before, but it bears repeating. My brother once asked me, now tell me, he says, you're a pastor, right? We're a close family. He says, so you're a pastor, right? And I said, yeah. And he says, so what do you do? I mean, like, what is your job? And I said, well, I spend a lot of time talking with people. And he paused for a moment and he said, and they pay you for that? But in a way, our ministry is about faces, not vases. I mean, we're here not only because God is forging a new relationship and making us stronger in our faith with God, but mostly, it turns out, I found out, people don't actually, for the most part, come to church to encounter God. They come to encounter each other. And in encountering one another, they find God. Powerful and true. So that Jesus will gather around the table with tax collectors and prostitutes and whoever will want to come, and you just have this picture in your mind of God doing this new thing and shining a new light, a new epiphany on the enterprise of God's activity among us. Even St. Paul, that once horrible person who used to kill Christians, in his letter to the Ephesians says, and it turns out that God has sent me to bring the gospel to the Gentiles. It's only later when you read in 1 Corinthians that you find out just how controversial that was, that this new light had shined to find out that Jesus did not just come for his own people, but for every people. And so Jesus draws us into this epiphany of faces. And our faith is much the same. I don't want to oversimplify it, but oftentimes our faith can even become a way to fill up the vase. And you've probably even used this kind of nomenclature yourself. I certainly have. I'll ask people, why do you come to church? And they will say, well, my cup gets emptied out during the week. It's a lovely metaphor. And I come to church to get my cup filled. And I've always been puzzled by that. Because I come to church to get my cup emptied. To be emptied of anxiety and despair and hatred and self-aggrandizement and all of the things that the world says to me all the time. You need to be better and stronger and greater and richer and more powerful, and you need to have authority over people, and you need to assert yourself and your 401k, sorry about all of us, doesn't matter. At least not as much as you think. And it is only here that the light shines on something different, that the person sitting next to me in the pew, God's own child of God, trumps all of it. That the face, God's shining presence in this place, is more important than the vase. Here we find ourselves blended together in holiness and prayer. Here we understand that both rich young ruler and down and out Gentile woman who has been besieged by a sickness find the love of God together. At the end of our story, the three wise men come together and they are overwhelmed with joy. For the light has led them to this unexpected scene of a child in a manger. This same child who Herod first will try to kill, and Herod Antipas will hang on a cross, and who will rise from the dead, but whose light will not be diminished. And so, my friends, it's not just a matter of choosing whether you are a face or a vase or how you will live your life, but how God will continue to shine on light and reveal for each of us God's presence and love. In our neighbor, in our community, in our world, and in the cosmos. And where we see faces, the light of God is revealed.